Chapter 13. It was in late May that I believe Timothy decided we might stay there forever. We had not seen a schooner sail or heard an airplane since setting foot on the island. I know it was late May because each day he'd dropped a small pebble into an old can that he'd found on the beach. It was our only way to tell how many days we'd been there. Every so often, I'd count them, beginning with April 9. We now had 48 pebbles in the can. On this day, Timothy said thoughtfully,
"Philippe, has it ever come into your own self that I might be poorly again some marnin?"
I knew he was thinking about Malar and the fever. I said it had. He said,
"Well, you must den know how to provide your own self with fish."
For more than a week, I knew he had been laboring over nails to turn them into fish hooks. He always speared the fish or langosta with a sharp stick. But I could not see, of course, to do that. I knew he was making the hooks for me. He said with a secret tone in his voice,
"I have found an outrageous good hole on the reef in a safe place."
We went down the hill and started out along the reef shelf. By now my feet were tough, and I hardly felt the jagged edges of the coral. But I knew that lurking in the tide pools were the treacherous sea urchins. Stepping on them invited a sharp spine in your foot. And Timothy had already warned me that
"de very poison, dey be giving you terrible pain."
Every 2 feet, Timothy had driven a piece of driftwood deep into the coral crevices so that I could feel them as I went along. Neither of us knew what to do about the sea urchins, but Timothy said he'd think mightily about them. He had taken a large rock to smash them all along the path over the reef top, but in time, they would come back. We went out about 50 feet along the reef, and then he said,
"Now we fish."
He described the hole to me. It was about 20 feet in diameter and 6 to 8 feet deep. The bottom was sandy, but mostly free of coral so that my hooks would not snag. He said there was a most natural opening to the sea so that the fish could swim in and out of this coral-walled pool. He took my hand to have me feel all around the edges of the hole. The coral had been smoothed over by centuries of sea wash. Timothy said that the sand in the seawater acted like a grindstone on the sharp edges of the coral. It was not completely smooth, but there were no jagged edges sticking out.
"Now reach down here," Timothy said, "and tug off the muscle."
I put my hand into the warm water, kneeling down over the ledge, and felt a muscle. But in ripping it loose, I lost my balance, and only Timothy's hand prevented me from falling in. If you are blind, the sensation of falling can be terrifying. My memory of the fall off the raft was still very clear.
Timothy said, "Easy there, Philippe. Just sit a moment and relax."
His voice was soothing.
"If ever you do fall, just stay in the hole a while. Feel which way the water washes, then follow it to the ledge, grab hole, and pull your own self out."
Timothy guided my hands in opening the tough mussel shell and digging the slippery meat out to bait the hook.
"'Tis an outrageous sharp knife, so be very careful of your fingers."
Then he told me to feel the hook and slip the mussel bait over the barb. I'd fished many times with my father, and this was easy. Rusty bolts served as sinkers. Timothy had found several pieces of wood with bolts in them, had burned them, then raked the bolts out of the ashes. He'd unraveled a lifeline from the raft to make single strands for the fishing line. I dropped the hook and sinker overboard. In a moment, there was a sharp tug. I jerked, flipping the fish backward over my shoulder so it would land on the reef. Timothy cheered and told me to feel along the line to the wriggling fish, then take the hook out. Squirming and jumping in my hand, it was small but fat. I grinned over toward Timothy. When I had fished before, it was fun. Now I felt I had done something very special. I was learning to do things all over again, by touch and feel. I said to Timothy,
"This is outrageous humbugging good fish hole."
He laughed with pleasure. Every day after that I did all the fishing. Timothy, of course, continued to get langosta. He had to die for them, but I caught all the fish. After the third morning, he let me go out alone on the reef. I'd feel my way along his driftwood stobs, find the hole, pry a mussel loose, and then fish. I was alone on the reef, but somehow I always felt he was sitting on the beach nearby. I could sense his presence, yet he was always at the hut when I got back there. We often talked about the Kay and what was on it. Timothy had not thought much about it. He took it for granted that the Kay was always there. But I told him about geography, and how maybe a volcano could have caused the Devil's Mouth. He'd listen in fascination, almost speechless. We talked about how the little coral animals might have been building the foundations of the Kay for thousands of years. I said, "Then sand began to gather on it, and after more years, it was finally an island." It was as if a new world had opened up for Timothy. He kept using that same expression. "That be true?" I found out that he'd never thought about how the sea grape or the vines or the coconuts came to our Kay. I told him what I knew. Seeds had drifted in from the sea, or birds had brought them. After a rain, they'd taken root. "De lizard?" he asked sternly. "I bet a bird flying from another island holding a mother lizard in its beak dropped it here. Then the baby lizards were born. Or maybe a mother lizard washed ashore on driftwood during a storm." Timothy was very impressed, and I felt good that I'd been able to tell him something. We found a lot to talk about. I think it was the fifth afternoon of this week that I blurted out to Timothy, "I'll climb the palm now." "Eh, Philip," he said, and I could almost see the grin on his face and the light in his eyes as he looked skyward. Greedily, I'm sure. He said, "There is one coconut tree over there that has a sway in his back like an old horse. That is the one to climb." I was trembling a little as he led me to the tree, telling me I should go up just a short way, climb it like a monkey. If I could do it, I was to come back down, put the knife between my teeth, and go up again. The trunk of this palm tree must have been about 2 feet in diameter because I could easily put my hands around to the back. I grasped it, hunched my body, placed my bare feet on the rough trunk, and began to climb. Timothy was probably holding his breath. I went up about 10 feet and froze. I could not move up or down. My legs and arms were rigid. Timothy, standing below to catch me if I fell, called up softly, "Philippe, 'tis no shame to ease your own self back down to the sand." Slowly, I began to back down along the trunk. The bark was rough against my hands and feet, but what I felt most was Timothy's disappointment. I couldn't have been more than a few feet off the ground when I took a deep breath and said to myself, "If you fall, you'll fall in sand." Then I started climbing again. Timothy called up, "You have forgot the knife!" I knew that if I stopped now, I'd never climb it. I didn't answer him, but kept my hands and feet moving steadily. Then I heard him shout, "You be getting to the top!" Palm fronds brushed my head. I grasped the base of one to pull myself up. Timothy let out a roar of joy. Then he told me how to reach the coconuts. It took a long time to pull, tug, and twist two of them loose, but they finally fell. I stayed in the palm another few minutes to rest, then slid down. I had won. As my feet touched the ground, Timothy hugged me, yelling, "De palm harass us no more!" We drank every drop of the coconut milk and feasted on the fresh meat. Squatting near me, his teeth crunching the coconut, Timothy said, "You see, Philippe, you do not need the eye, no. You have done without the eye what I couldn't do with my whole body." It was almost as if I'd graduated from the survival course that Timothy had been putting me through since we had landed on the Kay. It rained that night, a very soft rain, not even enough to drip through the palm frond roof. Timothy breathed softly beside me. I had now been with him every moment of the day and night for 2 months, but I had not seen him. I remembered that ugly, welted face, but now, in my memory, it did not seem ugly at all. It seemed only kind and strong. I asked, "Timothy, are you still black?" His laughter filled the hut.